I want to welcome everybody to our webinar and thank you for attending. It's great to have you all here. As Tom said, we do have several hundred people who have signed in, so you're going to be in for a treat with today's topic. And I'm Robin Levin, your co-host and marketing consultant to Pensco Trust Company. And today you're going to be learning about real estate cash flow analysis using retirement accounts. And I've invited Douglas Rutherford, a nationally recognized CPA who specializes in the real estate industry, to take us through the analysis. And on the second part of today's webinar, Tom Anderson will be speaking about the use of LLCs and partnerships with IRAs. So I wanted to let everyone know that if you are new on the webinar, each month we do offer a free one-hour webinar on various topics related to self-directed IRAs. So this would be a good time to mark your calendar. Next webinar, it will be October 3rd. They're always on a Wednesday. And again, for those of you who are new to the program, a special welcome. And Pensco is the leading self-directed IRA custodian with over $2.1 billion in assets under administration and is proud to be the knowledge leader in the industry. And Pensco is very passionate about educating investors and professionals about the opportunities afforded by self-directed IRAs, often overlooked in an underutilized tool. And by the way, Pensco does not sell products nor give advice. Self-directed investing means you, the investor, choose the investment, and Pensco enables clients to make real estate and other alternative investments through their IRAs. So now let me explain how you can participate on today's webinar. You all received a link to the slides, and if for any reason you didn't get the email, you can simply go on to penscotrust.com and click the yellow graphic where it says free one-hour webinar, and there is a link right there for the handout, so that'll make it easy for you. So you can also print those out or watch them online, whatever you choose. And we will also be recording the call, so tomorrow morning you'll have access to an MP3 file, and that way you can listen to the webinar again, you can listen to it later, download it to your iPod, and a lot of people feel they're very happy about that, so they're able to listen to it over and over again. If you have a question that we don't get to, you can email it to education@pensco.com. And in the subject line, just put that you have a question either on the LLC portion later today or on the cash flow analysis, and we'll try to get that answered for you too. So before I introduce our first guest, I want to turn it over to Tom Anderson, my co-host and CEO of Pensco Trust Company, who's calling in from Maine while he's taking a little time off. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you. Usually at this point in time, I discuss something that's relevant to the self-directed IRA industry, but to be frank, I've been contemplating bowline knots and mooring a boat in a stiff wind over the last couple of days, so I really haven't focused on self-directed IRAs. But for those who haven't been to Maine lately, the weather is spectacular, and this is sort of the late summer. Kids are back at school. It's pretty quiet up here. Good fishing and good food. So if you got a chance to get away, it's a good place to go. And that's it for me today.
All righty, so we're all jealous now. Well, now it's my pleasure to introduce Doug Rutherford. As I said, he's a nationally recognized CPA practicing in the real estate industry. He's an author, businessman, real estate investor, and the founder of Rutherford CPA and Associates, and also the founder of RentalSoftware.com. And I don't know too many CPAs that specialize quite in the real estate industry the way you do, Doug. I've asked him to compare the return on investment with and without a self-directed IRA as he goes through his analysis today. And Doug developed the Cash Flow Analyzer software series beginning in 1993 to assist his clients in analyzing real estate investments. And today, over 20,000 real estate investors, brokers, agents, bankers, and mortgage lenders, and others in the U.S., Canada, and Australia, and other foreign countries use the Cash Flow Analyzer software. He's also offered a special discount to webinar attendees if they want to check out his products further. You'll get a link tomorrow in the email, and you'll find out how to do that. So let's get started. Doug, thanks so much for joining us today, and welcome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Very excited to be part of this and part of Pensco's educational series. And, of course, I'm excited about talking about something that's very passionate to me is cash flow analysis. And, of course, I know a bunch of people are snickering right now that a CPA is excited about number crunching. But, you know, it's really not the actual number crunching that gets me excited. You know, I talk to thousands of people at seminars and trade shows. And, as you know, Robin mentioned, we've got 20,000 users of our software. And really, it's what people do with the numbers. And when they are educated enough and they use the cash flow analysis to calculate the rates of return on particular properties, they're able to make better investment decisions and obviously become more successful. So that's really what I'm excited about, is people obviously taking something that's probably a little bit difficult, I guess, in that grappling with it and turning it to an advantage and making better decisions in investment, real estate investing. Now, when you do, of course, a cash flow analysis, the whole goal, of course, is to make a decision as to whether you want to buy, sell, or hold, and obviously understanding that is very important. But cash flow analysis is really a part or a component of calculating a return on investment. And that return on investment is even a smaller component of the factors that you actually have to make in the decision-making process. And if you jump to the agenda on page 5, slide 5, this is what I'm going to kind of talk about. Obviously, cash flow analysis is a much deeper subject than what we're going to be able to go through today. But the decision-making process is very important to understand in being able to make a decision, of which return on investment is a component of that. And then, of course, we're going to talk about the framework of cash flow analysis, couple of the financial ratios. Certainly there are a number of them, but we are only going to talk about a couple of them that are, I think, are more important. Some income tax issues. There's a couple of points here I want you guys to just be cognizant of as you go through an analysis. I think it's very important. I see a lot of mistakes and a lot of assumptions, and I'm just going to go through that. And then finally, what I want to do in taking our software, I just did a comparison of a typical investment where I'm from, and did an analysis where we did computing the cash flow based on owning it personally and then putting it into a Roth account or an IRA account and doing the analysis with the potential UBIT tax, which I'll go into a little bit more, and then being able to compare the overall cash profit and the rate of return on those particular investments. So with that said, I want to jump into slide 6, which is the decision-making process. And when you are making a decision on purchasing a property, there are these factors you have to take into consideration. These are obvious, but, you know, certainly risk is something you need to understand and think through. The risk of a property or real estate is going to differ between the type of real estate that you are wanting to invest in and also the strategy, you know, whether you're flipping or whether you're holding for appreciation or what have you. You have to understand what the risks are as a component of the decision making. You identify them and then you try to mitigate them. Like, if a property, there's a risk that it could burn down. Well, how do you mitigate that? Well, through some type of insurance. The property that you're about to buy could have termites. How do you mitigate that? Well, through some home inspection or have a seller some type of treatment and so forth. Somebody could fall and hurt themselves. How do you mitigate that? Well, through insurance and through entity structure. So those are the things that you need to identify and mitigate, but there are some risks that you cannot mitigate. If your assumption on a particular property that's going to appreciate 6% a year over the next 4 or 5 years, you really can't mitigate that. So that's a risk that you're taking on, and you need to be compensated for that risk. And how are you compensated? You're compensated through an increased return on investment. And the second component is the same thing as far as what you have to think of, and that's time and effort. Every real estate investment is going to have a little bit different in time and effort. An apartment building is going to take more time than perhaps a residential property, and you have to factor that in. My personal time is probably going to be valued differently than someone else. I mean, I have a family, I have kids, and I've got several businesses, so my personal time is probably going to be valued a little bit higher than somebody maybe who's 20 and has no children and so forth. I know that when I was 20, my personal time was not valued as much, but you have this subjective value of the amount of time it's going to take for a particular investment that you have to factor in. For example, you may look at one investment that is an 11% rate of return, but it takes 10 hours a week, versus one that's 9% and it's only an hour a week. Which one are you going to take based on that? And it's really a function of how you what value assign to your personal time and so forth. But it's extremely important that when you go through the decision-making process, that risk and time and effort are factored in. And those are factored in, you have to be compensated through a return on investment. Now, return on investment also includes the opportunity cost for the cash that you are using to invest in real estate. So let's say you have $50,000 and a CD making 4 or 5%. You're giving that up to go invest in real estate. So that's like the floor. You need to be at least making that, plus compensated for risk and time and effort and so forth. So in coming up with your own personal requirement as far as a rate of return, these are the three main factors that you have to consider. And on slide 7, and we have a cash flow analysis book that goes into this in much more detail, but this is just a matrix that really the point of it is that it's trying to help you understand there's got to be a balance between risk and time and effort and the ultimate return on investment. Now, if return on investment is so important, we obviously need to be able to calculate it and understand it. And if you go to slide 8, one of the problems with return on investment is that it's a confusing term for people. It's actually a generic term or an umbrella term. It's like payment. Did you get paid? Yes. Well, that could mean cash. That could mean, through service or through credit card and so forth. It's a generic term. And as an example of a return on investment, anybody on this call, I will guarantee a 40% return on your investment. If you give me $10,000, I guarantee that you're going to get $14,000 back, $4,000 more than what you've given me. Now, your first question should be, well, when do I get that $14,000 back? Well, if I say 10 years, okay, while the 40% is a return on investment calculation, using a different return on investment calculation would say that's less than 4% return on your investment. So when somebody is showing you a property or showing you some numbers and they say it's XYZ return on investment, you need to understand how did they come up with that number and the significance of that particular calculation. Now, on slide 8, I list a few of the return on investment calculations, and we're going to focus on two of them, cash-on-cash return and internal rate of return. But before we can do cash on cash or internal rate of return, we first have to do a cash flow analysis. And slide 9 shows two basic calculations. There's an annual calculation, and then there's a year of sale calculation. Now, our software does this every single year, including the year of sale analysis, and does all the rates of return for you. But basically speaking, you have to do this from an annual perspective and then a year of sale perspective. So the annual calculation, you're certainly just taking the rental income, and, of course, every year it's increasing, hopefully, and then the vacancy rate and then the rental expenses, and those are increasing annually as well to come up with our net operating income. And that's an important financial term, NOI, which we're not going to get into today. But from there, you take out your debt payments and your income taxes to come up with your net cash flow. Now, obviously, it's a very simplistic framework. It's much harder to mechanically come up with those numbers on paper and so forth, but that is the formula, and the net cash flow is the number you have to focus on because that's sort of your dividend. That's your yield. It's like a stock of some sort. You're stroking a check for this property. What is it that you're going to get back every year for your investment after you pay Uncle Sam, Billy Bob the plumber, everybody? So what is it that you're going to be getting for your investment? That's your annual calculation. Of course, to do a complete rate of return analysis, you need to do a year of sale calculation, which means you have to figure out which year you want to sell it and do a projection, do your selling expense, subtract your selling expenses like a 6% real estate commission. Here in Georgia, it's common to pay 3% closing costs, so we're talking about a 9% selling expense to come up with your adjusted sales price, less the debt then in existence at the time, less your taxes to come up with your net cash flow. Now, in our software, of course, we do this every single year, but if you were just doing it by hand, you would have to do some type of projection of when you think you would sell that that property, take that cash, discount it back along with the annual calculation to come up with a rate of return. Now, once you do these numbers, once you have these numbers, then you can compute a rate of return. And if you go to slide 10, we're just going to talk about two simple calculations, cash-on-cash return and internal rate of return. Slide 11 is cash-on-cash return. It's what I call the great equalizer because really it takes the aspect of it being a real estate investment out of the equation, and it really makes it more of an investment to be compared to other investments, stocks, bonds, CDs, and so forth. And cash-on-cash return is really the net cash flow that we calculated before divided by our initial investment, which is our down payment. So that calculation, of course, is what our cash-on-cash return is, and that is what you can then compare to a CD, for example. So if I have a property that's generating a 7% cash-on-cash, that's going to be a healthy number to compare to a 4.5% or so in a money market account. And is probably the most important ratio to take in consideration when you are holding a property for a very long period of time, because you want to see how that property is cash flowing and giving you that quote-unquote dividend over the years as it relates to the investment in order to generate that cash flow. And just a very simplistic way, the cash-on-cash return, it's like a certificate of deposit calculation. You give a bank $10,000. At the end of the year, they give you your $10,000 back plus $300. That's a 3% cash-on-cash return. And in slide 12, I have a little bit more of an illustrative example where we're buying a property for $100,000, borrowing $80,000. So we're investing $20,000, and then we're getting a $2,000 projection at the end of year one. So that's essentially a 10% cash-on-cash return. Now, the issue with cash-on-cash return is that it is a calculation per year. It's not cumulative. It's a snapshot of that particular property in that particular year. Now, the next slide on 13, internal rate of return, that's going to be your total return because cash-on-cash also does not take in consideration the appreciation on your property or your debt pay down, and those are two significant numbers in building wealth in real estate. So the internal rate of return does that, and it's a very complicated formula, but it essentially takes all of the cash flows, negative, uneven, so forth, over the years, and discounts them back, including the sale cash flow, it discounts them at a particular rate in order to equal your investment in that property. And that rate is your internal rate of return. As I mentioned, it does take into consideration the time value of money and also the sale of the property. Now, I know that that's really quickly going over internal rate of return, and as another resource, you can certainly go to our website. We have more examples of it. You can even download our manual to our software for free, and it goes into it a lot more than what we're able to talk about today. Now, the internal rate of return example on 14, slide 14, is we're making an investment of $100,000, and then we're assuming that we're having a 2, 5, and 1 cash flow in years 1, 2, and 3, and then we're assuming we're selling the property at the end of year 3, netting $125,000. So essentially, we're investing $100,000, and over 3 years, we're going to get back $133,000 or a $33,000 profit, which is 33%, of course, of my net investment. But that's a rate of return, but that's not internal rate of return. If you impose time value of money, it's going to be a different number, and that's 10.23%. And that is to say that you're almost getting, it's almost to say that you're getting 10% per year, not necessarily, but that's one way to look at it. You can also kind of look at taking 33%, dividing it by 3. It's almost like that, but it's not, just because of cash flows are uneven over the years, and so therefore the return is going to fluctuate year to year. But if you discount that back, that's the number that you need to focus on, and that's the number that you use to compare to other investments. Slide 15. Which one's more important, cash on cash return or internal rate of return? Well, it depends on the circumstances and the strategy of the investment. The shorter your period of investment, your holding period, you're going to focus more on internal rate of return. This is where you're going to buy a property, and you're going to hold on for it for 2 or 3 years through the appreciation and sell it. You don't really care so much about the cash flow, or there's just not enough cash flow generated that it really makes a difference. That's going to be the internal rate of return focus. The longer you hold a property, the more you're going to look at the yield or the dividend per year on that particular investment. Because the longer you hold it, the further out you're going to actually be able to actually get or enjoy the appreciation on that property, and there's risks associated with that. But just like going to a doctor, you know, depending on your symptoms, it may be more important to check your heart or listen to your heart or do a blood test. But most likely, you're going to do both in order to be able to make a determination on what is the best solution for you. And it's the same thing with this. You need to look at both of them in tandem, but understand what each one of them are, what they're telling you. Slide 16, relating to tax issues. One of the biggest problems or issues I see is people, when they compute a cash flow analysis, they're computing a tax benefit for that particular property. And they may ultimately not actually get that benefit. The passive rules, by definition, state that a rental property is going to be limited as far as your ability to be able to write off those losses. Now, of course, there are exceptions to the rules, whether you're professional real estate, whether you're active participation, and so forth. But I see a lot of circumstances where there are properties that somebody's analyzing, and because of the nature of the investment, it's generating a lot of loss, and they're assuming they're going to be getting this tax benefit, whether they have other income or not. And that will throw off your numbers significantly, because that is, if it's a benefit, that's a cash flow inflow. And you have to be very conscious of whether or not you actually are going to be tripped up by these passive loss rules. Tax depreciation. I hear all the time that people, this is the number one reason why you would buy real estate, is the number one tax benefit, and it's actually not. Yes, there's a benefit in tax depreciation. You get a deduction, and there's some time value of money. But what people forget, or they don't put two and two together, is that you're actually borrowing, and you have to pay that back. If you have a $10,000 write-off for depreciation, and you're at a 28% tax bracket, it's a $2,800 benefit, assuming you're not tripped up by the passive loss rules. But your basis in that property is also reducing. When you go to sell that property, your basis is less, and so you sort of recapture that gain, and you pay tax accordingly. So it's wonderful to have tax depreciation, but the real benefit in real estate investing is not that, but it's the rate arbitrage. As I mentioned, if you have a $10,000 benefit at 28%, you've got a $2,800 benefit from the government. But when you go to sell the property, it's at tax capital gains rate of maybe 15% or maybe even 10%, depending on your situation. And so that $10,000 you pay back to government, but maybe only $1,000 of the $2,800 that you pay back. and that is a substantial permanent savings of $1,800. That is phenomenal, and that's the true benefit. Of course, the longer you hold the property, the more appreciation you get, and the larger the rate arbitrage that you have. Now, of course, that only holds up if the capital gains rate, capital gains tax stays the same. If they change it where it's equal, like it was a number of years ago, where it's the same as ordinary rates, then that arbitrage is gone, and you're only left with the time value of the actual tax depreciation benefit. The final aspect, as it relates to real estate, is the UBIT. Now, obviously, a lot of people are listening to the call because they're either interested or they're actually investing in real estate with their IRA or Roth or so forth. And there are certain circumstances that will cause a retirement account to have to pay tax. When a property, you have to leverage and borrow money, there's some calculations that you have to go through, and there's a federal income tax that's imposed. However, generally speaking, it's going to be less than if you owned it individually. But you have to kind of crunch the numbers and determine that. And it's actually, you don't have to be an expert. Now, there's a wonderful webinar by Eric Wickstrom that he did with Pensco maybe about a year ago that walks through how computing UBIT tax, and it's a fantastic job. But and I would encourage you to listen to it. But you really don't need to become a tax accountant to understand it. You just need to know that it's there, and of course with a model like ours, it automatically computes it. You just want to make sure that that is spoken for in your cash flow numbers so that you can then compare it to that of an investment that you would hold personally and determine whether or not that particular property it should be held in your retirement account or not. On slide 17, I have a typical property that I just dropped in the numbers in the analyzer to come up with a snippet to share with you. And it's a purchase price of $100,000, fair market value of $125,000. Now, I know my California friends are wondering whether or not this $100,000 house has a roof or a foundation, and I can assure you, yes, it does. It's actually all brick and built in the 50s, but it's a fantastic rental property because it's priced right. But with my CPA humor set aside, you take the property at $100,000, fair market value of $125,000, assuming a conservative 3% growth rate over the number of years. Our rents are $1,250, expenses $5,700 a year. And we're going to assume borrowing 70% at a 7.25% with a 15-year note, and of course our individual tax rates. On slide 18, this is just a snippet of year 10 in this property. So we've taken those numbers on slide 17 and we grew them based on the assumptions. And you can see that with the UBIT tax computed, it's only $273 in tax, versus $1,947 for owning the property personally. That's a significant difference, about $1,700 in year 10. Now, this is just 1 year. And remember, I bought this property for $100,000, and I borrowed $70,000, so my check that I wrote is only $30,000. That's a significant difference of $1,700 over a $30,000 investment, and all I did was chose to use my self-directed account versus owning it personally. Slide 19 takes the same property, but we do that the property sale analysis, and it's all the same except for the income taxes. If I owned it personally and sold it in year 10, I would owe $21,000 versus about $11,000 in the IRA. And so my total cash difference in owning it in my self-directed account versus personally is almost $20,000. Remember, I put $30 into it, and because I chose this account, I have $20,000 more than if I would have owned it personally. And, of course, if I do this once, twice, three, five, multiply it times 10, you know, you're talking about a significant number of properties that can generate a lot more because of the nature of of investing in a self-directed account. And you can see that the rate of return is different as well. It's greater for the self-directed, about 2.61%, almost 3%. That's a cumulative return. That means every year I'm getting that more of a rate of return. And that is, of course, a compound of interest, makes that $30,000 investment an additional $20,000 of pure cash if I were to sell it in that particular year. The next slide and the final slide is slide 20. And what I did is I took the same analysis, but I selected solo 401k, which is not subject to UBIT tax. And so I stripped that out. And you can see the difference is $32,000 difference. I invested $30,000, and now I have $32,000 more than my initial investment. I've doubled it. And, of course, the rate of return overall is significant as well. So you can see how very powerful it is to invest in an IRA. And we've all heard for years that, hey, investing in an IRA is great. But until a model like this has been created, nobody's been able to quantify the actual savings for a specific property. And so that's the beauty of the model, is being able to select which type of account it is that you want to use and do the number crunching. And of course, these reports are obviously can be used to go and secure funding, because that is the part of the due diligence of a lender. So that's just a quick and dirty overview of cash flow analysis and sort of making the decision as to what it is that makes an investment a good investment, and the factors that you have to consider.
Well, that's great, Doug, and it really shows that you need to do a lot more than just jump on a plane and go look at the property, and some people don't even do that. So it does show that there's an easier way to crunch out the numbers and look at it in several different ways.
Yeah, and just in quick summary, obviously, as I mentioned, just to kind of pull the beginning to the end, this is the rate of return is the one number that you focus on, but it needs to compensate you, obviously, for the time and effort and for the risk that you're taking for that specific property. Together, that's going to help you make a better decision on that particular property. And it really, even though the numbers are a little bit difficult to come up with by hand, you need a model that does it, whether it's our software or somebody else's, it doesn't matter. There's so many moving pieces, it's just critical that you quickly and easily are able to jump in and do those types of calculations.
Doug, I'm not sure if you're aware, but the common view of CPAs is that it doesn't make sense to buy real estate in an IRA because you lose tax advantages. So your presentation is going to be very helpful in trying to educate other CPAs who really haven't taken the time to analyze it the way you have.
Well, I think that the model bears out the benefit, and they can attack it however they wish, but the numbers are the numbers. And what you have to be careful of with CPAs is that, you have to make sure you have the right CPA, because just like doctors, you don't go to a cardiologist if you have a foot problem. You know, there are CPAs that deal with taxes, there are CPAs that deal with financial audits and so forth. So when you deal with a CPA, make sure that they understand you, or that they understand real estate investing, so that you can get the better advice. If they don't understand, they're normal people. If they don't understand something, they're going to shy away from it. And so you have to make sure that they are well attuned as to the rules.
Just about a year ago, I saw a brochure, or actually a magazine, with about 8 CPAs on the ledger, and about 7 or 8 attorneys, and there's an article in there about using IRAs for real estate investing, and it actually stated that you can do it, but you destroy the tax-deferred compound growth aspects of IRAs, and it just made absolutely no sense. But
yeah.
The misinformation out there is incredible, but we're working our way through it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right, Doug, and for people that want to get in touch with you, what would you give us?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that you can do. Our website is rentalsoftware.com. We also have another one, landlordsoftware.com. So Either way, our toll-free number is 866-290-4183, or feel free to email me at Doug, D-O-U-G, at rentalsoftware.com. I'm happy to field any questions that anybody has. There's a number of tutorials on the website. There's a lot of educational tools to kind of take these concepts and expound on them.
Great, and thanks so much for staying on time and condensing the presentation.
My pleasure.
It was very valuable, and we appreciate having you on the call. So stay around till the end.
Okay.
And I'm going to make a few announcements before I introduce Tom. And Tom did mention about CPAs learning more, and we do offer one-day free training or education around the country for professionals, including for CPAs, attorneys, mortgage professionals, real estate professionals, financial advisors who want to learn more. We have these webinars, but people often say, well, how can I learn more about self-directed IRA investing? So come out and join us. The next one is in Boston, September 20th. It's from 8 to 5. And you will definitely learn from the leaders in the industry how to capitalize on this market. The emerging IRA market is over $4.2 trillion. Some of the sponsors and speakers that will be there you'll have access to are Pat Rice, who wrote the book, literally, IRA Wealth. So he'll be talking about lots of different strategies that he's used to buy real estate with retirement funds. And also North American Savings Bank will be teaching you how to use leverage with your IRA through non-recourse lending. We also have Spectrus Real Estate Group, who will be speaking on how to defer taxes with 1031 exchanges. And there is another subject on how to use land trusts as an asset protection tool by NARS. Of course, you'll also be learning from Tom how to avoid prohibited transactions and a lot of different IRA strategies and scenarios. And for those of you, the professionals out there that need a little help with your marketing, I'll be speaking on how to use the Internet, webinars, blogs, PR, and a lot of new tools to grow your business. So come out, join us. You can sign up online at penscotrust.com and click on the right side. There's a button that says one-day mini-symposium. And your next one is September 20th in Boston, October 25th in San Francisco, and November 15th in Chicago. So certainly worth the airfare. And I want to make another quick announcement for advanced education, and that's after you've been through the mini-symposium and you really want to dig deeper into it. We do have educational sessions around the country. So the next one is coming up in Florida. Again, that's on your handouts. You can sign up online. Thursday, September 13th in Fort Lauderdale, October 11th in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and October 30th in Atlanta. So, Doug, maybe you'll join us in Atlanta for that.
Absolutely.
Maybe we'll even have you featured there.
There you go.
All righty. So that's a little announcement. And, of course, next month, the webinar, we're going to have a panel of IRA investors who are going to be sharing their stories about what they invested in, what their returns have been, their due diligence process, and basically the whole experience. So if you're an investor out there and you want to share an experience with us, send me an email or send it to education@pensco.com and just put IRA investor in the subject line, and I'll get in touch with you. And moving on to Tom, the next subject is on self-directed investing and the use of LLCs, C-Corps, and partnerships. And I know a lot of people want to know more about that. So welcome, Tom. Let's get started on the second half.
Okay. I don't have the Internet access here, but I'm on what I think is slide 25, which says, what are LLCs? So if you could get yourself to that page. Whether you're a neophyte to self-directed IRAs or an experienced investor, you probably heard the term LLC in conjunction with real estate investing through IRAs. And that's because if you do any work on the Internet and search under self-directed IRAs, you'll see a number of companies that are what we call facilitators who help people create LLCs for the purpose of real estate investing in IRAs. And generally, they're pretty positive about the use of an LLC because that's what they're selling. And I thought it'd be helpful to, once again, give a more balanced view of the use of an LLC because a company like Pensco both invests through LLCs on behalf of clients and also other entities on behalf of clients, as well as investing directly in real estate. So That's the purpose of today's session, to give a more balanced view of when do you use an LLC, what are the advantages, what are the disadvantages, and the mechanics. So with that said, an LLC is just one of various types of corporate structures that one can create to run a business. And it stands for limited liability company. The other types are C corporation, which is the common corporate structure for a public company, mainly because it has more options for how things are conducted and structured. And then there's a limited partnership, which is essentially run by a general partner and a lot of passive investors named limited partners participating through their investment amounts, but that's generally all the decisions made by the general partner. And that's typically done for situations where there's a pool of money being created and the general partner uses those funds to, without the direct participation on the decision-making process by the limited partners, to allocate the funds to whatever project they're running. There's another entity called general partnership, and this entity structure is not conducive to IRA investing, so I won't spend much time on this, but it would require an IRA to be an active participant in the management of the partnership, which clearly can't work because an IRA is not a person. And it also would have the IRA sharing full liability with all the other partners, and that's something that would not be attractive to either the IRA owner nor the custodian. The other structure, the last structure, the S structure, is not available for IRAs because an S corporation would be invalidated as an S corp if it had an IRA as an investor. A solo K, which Doug talked about earlier, which applies for people who are self-employed and want to have a pension plan, can invest as an equity investor in an S-Corp. So it does work for solo Ks, but not for IRAs. So those are the basic structures. I'm not going to go through all the pros and cons of each at this point because the topic really is LLCs, and that's the most common vehicle being used for IRA investing through entities. And one of the reasons that's the case is that it's available in all 50 states. It's relatively inexpensive to create, modestly expensive to maintain, and it has two classes of stock, which some of the other vehicles don't have. The C corporation does, though. All right, so let's go to the next slide. How do IRAs invest in these entities? Well, first of all, most likely you're not going to find a typical traditional IRA corporation like a traditional bank or broker-dealer or mutual fund company allowing you to invest in a private LLC. And therefore, you need to work with a custodian like Pensco that will allow you to do so. So the first thing that happens if you're interested in investing in an LLC is you have to establish your IRA with the custodian, get the funds to that IRA from wherever they are, which is through the normal application process and filling out a funding form. And then in the course of sending in your application, you would instruct us that your desire is that you want to invest in a private LLC by filling out another purchase authorization form. And then we would contact you and ask you to submit, or the sponsor of that entity, if it's not you, to submit documentation to establish for us that the actual entity exists. It's been filed with the state as a legal entity. It has an operating agreement. It may be a pre-existing LLC and therefore has some financial history that can be documented that we'd like to see. And essentially, we're going to be looking for the fact that it is a legal entity and the fact that there is no obvious prohibited transaction in the form of self-dealing. We're not required to do so as part of our contractual agreement with the client, but we like to make sure that the extent that we're able, and it's obvious, and we spend a lot of time understanding the rules, that if we see something that's in violation of the rules, we'll certainly bring it to the attention of the IRA owner, because we would rather them know that than inadvertently creating a prohibited transaction. So we would review the documentation, and assuming we accepted it for not having any of those issues and for being established as a legal entity, we would then be ready, as soon as your funds are available, to fund the investment. And that would be sending the funds either by check or by wire to wherever you tell us to send it, usually at the bank account of the LLC. That will be overseen by the managing member of the LLC. And now you're invested in an LLC. And what does that mean? It means that your funds are in a corporate entity just like they would be if you bought stock in Cisco or Oracle or Apple Computer. You have an equity investment in the LLC. Majority of these LLCs are being formed by the owner of the IRA, and the owner of the IRA actually is the manager of that LLC. And we call those single-member LLCs. And in that case, you know, once it gets sent to the LLC bank account, you're essentially got this so-called, which you'll see on the Internet, checkbook control over your IRA. That being said, there is a lot of concern amongst regulators and custodians, and this is part of the sort of the balanced view of the use of LLCs. There's concern on the part of both custodians and regulators of those custodians that giving such control to the IRA owner can be a risky thing for the IRA owner. And it's generally assumed that, and this is not always the case, obviously, but the majority of the IRA owners are not as knowledgeable as either the regulators of IRAs nor the custodians of the rules, and particularly the prohibited transaction rules, because they're just not, it's not their primary, you know, responsibility. You know, they may be employed 9 to 5 and they're managing this LLC for real estate investing on the side, or, you know, they have a whole bunch of other things that they take care of, and this is, you know, being an expert in IRAs is not their the call in life, whereas it is more or less for the custodian. And on the next slide, you'll see just some of the things that custodians generally are aware of that can have an effect on transactions performed through LLCs and can, if not properly dealt with or if ignored, or whether it's inadvertently or overtly, can lead to a prohibited transaction. And a prohibited transaction in an LLC is no different than one performed directly with an IRA. If there's some type of self-dealing going on, it has the same consequence, which is the IRA will lose its status as an IRA, and all the funds will be distributed and taxed, and potentially penalized if the event, the prohibited transaction event, took place on a prior time. Then the penalties will accrue from that time, just like when you have you don't pay all your federal income tax and they audit that or find out 3 years later you start paying penalties on those numbers. So I'm not going to dwell on these the rules, but just to list them out, the plan asset rules, the self-dealing prohibited transaction rules under IRC 4975, co-investment rule 2010A from the Department of Labor, IRS Notice 2004-8, IRS Notice 2006-1A, the Rollins Tax Court case, and the Swanson case. All these and others have a bearing on what you do in those LLCs. So, not necessarily saying that you can't understand those, and in most cases you won't even run into those problems, but the important thing is you need to know they exist and have some idea of when you might be, you know, rubbing elbows with them. Now, those warnings being noted, most custodians will help individual members of LLCs with those kinds of determinations. That is, if you call our 800 number, which is 866-818-4472, and you're an IRA, a PENSCO IRA investor, and you've invested in a single-member LLC, and you ask us the questions, we will do our best to try to steer you wide and clear of any prohibited transactions. On the other hand, if you don't and you're not aware of those rules, you can, you know, you can get yourself in trouble. So when do, on the next slide, when do entities make sense for self-directed investments? This is my personal opinion, so there may be many other opinions on this phone call, but I think it makes some sense when there are an awful lot of transactions going on in a given year, let's say, within the entity and or the IRA, So if you had an awful lot of transactions that you would otherwise, you know, be participating in directly with the custodian through the IRA, in many cases, particularly when there are a large group of investors as well as a large number of transactions, when those two combinations occur, because the LLC will allow a single member, the managing member, to conduct the transactions on behalf of all the investors, then you can, you know, significantly reduce the paperwork and the interactions and having a whole bunch of people sign off on certain transactions. So it can facilitate those two scenarios, large numbers of transactions and or large numbers of investors combining to make investments with IRAs through entities. There are two particular types of investments that are particularly suitable for LLCs and not investing directly through IRAs. One is the purchase of tax liens, and the other is purchasing properties directly at auction. And the reason is that the IRA custodian can't just cut you a check or a cashier's check out of your IRA without any controls, knowing how you're going to use those funds or whether you're going to use them all and those kinds of issues for the purpose of you going down to an auction and you know, placing a bid and executing the bid immediately as is required. And also, as is required to purchase tax liens, you have to give the county or the city the money right then and there, or you know, the next person in line gets the bid. So that doesn't work real well directly out of an IRA. We just can't send money out not knowing what's going to happen to it. So that's where an LLC would be very helpful. We mentioned a large number of investors. And the only other reason, which typically is touted, but I would say that I'd have to somewhat disagree with, is that the LLC as an entity creates a veil to protect from significant liabilities against that entity. So if the LLC that, you know, has $500,000 worth of investors' money in it gets sued for $4 million and the award is given or granted, the most those that are suing can get is the total sum of $500,000, which are the sum of all the assets in the entity. They can't get any more. So they can't go after the underlying shareholders, net worth or whatever. However, there's another way of doing that directly with an IRA. You just divide up, you know, your $4 million IRA into, you know, let's say, equal pieces of $500,000, and just if each investment was a $500,000 investment, you would just have one through each IRA. And again, the other IRAs are not subject to liability stemming from any one of the other IRAs, so you can't flow through to all the IRAs to get the rest of those balance of funds if you're sued for $5 million. So you can accomplish the same thing that an LLC can do for you from asset protection if you divide up your IRAs. So those, I think, really sort of capture where I think you want to think about using LLCs. You certainly don't want to think about using LLCs just because somebody's trying to sell you an LLC. I just talked to an attorney down in Phoenix who makes a living creating LLCs for IRA holders, and she was indicating that she worries that they don't know what they're doing after they get into them, and that could create some risk to her as a practitioner if they get in trouble. Okay, so what are some of the responsibilities you have as the managing member of your LLC that's invested with your IRA? Very simply, you probably have to pay an annual franchise tax to the state that you're incorporated in. You may have to file a K-1 report, which the CPA will probably need to be hired to do for you, and that's particularly true if you have multiple investors. You're going to have to maintain books and records and bank accounts in the event that the company was ever audited for issues of private transactions, etc. So you're basically running a company. It's a small company, probably, but you have some duties, responsibilities, and the operating agreement will spell those out. And you certainly have to keep books and records. Now, those kinds of things are all done for you if you are investing directly with an IRA through a custodian. They keep all the books and records, and it's just something to keep in mind. Doug talked about the, factoring in the time you have to spend on a given investment. And certainly when you're running the LLC, you're going to be spending more time than you would if you were leaving those chores to the IRA custodian. On the next slide, these are some of the costs that can be associated with an LLC. Many people, you know, again, these facilitators tout the fact you're going to save in custodial fees. You don't want to have to pay the transaction fees, but they're offset by these other kinds of fees that you'll have to pay in support of your LLC. Typically, Pensco, for example, will have a purchase fee of $100 on the or a sale of real estate, $100. So you're going to avoid that if you conduct them directly through an LLC. But you have to create the LLC, which can cost anywhere from $2,000 to $10,000, which, depending on how active you're in real estate investing, could be quite a number of years before you're going to offset that in transaction fees. The annual state franchise taxes, preparation of a K-1, and, your bank account maintenance activities. Somebody has to, maintain the checkbook. And sometimes there are facilitators you can hire to do that for you, who will charge $200 a quarter. Not necessarily that you have to have that, but there are services out there to do that. And the basic maintenance of books and records. So, bottom line, with checkbook control, you do have more control, but you have more responsibility. And, people say invest with your self-directed IRA simply to write a check from your IRA account without asking for trust or custodial approval. Well, in a self-directed situation, the custodian is not really going to approve your checkbook transaction or the transaction that goes through them. They're going to be looking for prohibited transactions for your benefit, and certainly you wouldn't want to proceed with a prohibited transaction. And however, I can tell you that we've been told by people who want to create LLCs are doing so specifically so they can create prohibited transactions. That's sort of like playing Russian roulette with the IRS, and we would not support that client with that attitude. We would ask them to, use another custodian, because we don't believe in violating the rules. So why would you need a custodian? Well, basically, the custodian will do all the transactions for you, keep all the records, be available to consult with in case you have any questions about a given transaction, and we do that for free. And we always staying abreast of the latest information about prohibited transactions, so it's just part of our service. And if you want to get more information on that topic, there's some sightings there where you can go to the internet and read some more detail on that. Getting down to the LLC decision, there's lots of discussion about the use of LLCs, and much of that discussion is, and much of that promotion is done by those that only make a business out of selling LLCs. So just like you should consider cash flow and internal rate of return, you need to consider more than one thing that you're hearing about the use of LLCs, and I think the view of the custodian is an important one to consider. We are in the business of helping our clients, and we do allow people to invest both ways, but I think knowing when to use the right method is the most important factor. How much responsibility do you want to assume? How much cost do you want to assume personally, and what kind of deals are you going to be engaging in? If you're just going to buy a piece of property and then, hold it for 6 months, a year, 12 months, you certainly don't need an LLC to do that. If you're going to buy a dozen properties in a year using a number of different investors going together through an LLC, then maybe an LLC makes sense. We have thousands of clients that both use LLCs and don't. That is directly invest in IRAs, having IRAs directly invest in real estate, and they both work. And if you're somebody that does want to spend a lot of time on the investment and want to turn it over to professionals, and you want to use the custodian, if you want to have more self-control and you want to be responsible with it, learn some more about the rules or pay a professional to assist you, then maybe an LLC works as well. Just have your eyes open and understand that there are responsibilities that may not be totally spelled out by somebody who's trying to sell you an LLC. I think that's my last slide, is it not?
It is. Alrighty. Well, thanks very much. And I do have a couple of questions here. I know we're just about finished. But before I do that, let me just want to make a couple other references to material that you mentioned. We do have a whole series of the one-hour webinars on the website at penscotrust.com. So you can click there and take a look at, as Doug mentioned, there's a UBIT webinar from Eric Wickstrom and a whole bunch of other ones. So you can download those. They're MP3 files, and that's available for you. And there's also the Solo K product. You can take a look at that on the website. It's excellent for self-employed. So check that one out. And other reference materials, there's an ebook that you can read on the top 50 questions on investing with a self-directed IRA. It's the little red ebook on the website, and you can download that, print it out, and give it to your clients. It's a really great reference tool. And, of course, the Business Development Center, Tom mentioned, this telephone number at Pensco Trust is 866-818-4472. You can also send them an email to takecontrol@pensco.com. And we did get quite a few questions by email today, so I'll ask a few of them, Tom and Doug, before we wrap up, and then the rest of them we'll try to get to in a future email. So, Doug, this one is for you. Do you have a cash flow analysis for a real estate project showing the after-tax return after all the retirement funds have been distributed to the owner, with taxpayer paying ordinary income tax rates on the IRA distribution as opposed to capital gain rates if invested outside the IRA? Should have warned you, that's a long one.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And no, it does not take that in consideration. And the problem with coming up with a model to do that is the issues or trying to contemplate the ultimate tax position of the individual. But that's a very fair question. I mean, if it's a Roth IRA, for example, then there is no tax consequences. If it's a regular IRA, then ultimately pulling that money out will potentially generate another level of tax or individual tax. So the model does not ultimately take that into consideration.
Okay.
Well, there's another point, though, and I think people overlook it, and that's that it's not really an equal comparison if, in fact, you don't go through 1031 exchanges along the way with the investments that are done outside the IRA. Otherwise, you're going to be lowering your net proceeds by paying tax at each event or each sale event along the way.
I mean, there's just a number of issues relating to that, the time value of money when the tax is pulled out 30, 40 years, or the income's pulled out and you're paying tax 30, 40 years from now. It's a difficult calculation. It's certainly something you need to be cognizant of, that if you have a regular IRA and you're building it up, which is a good thing, that you may ultimately have to pay tax when you pull that out.
All right. And this one is, okay, this is for Tom. In order to make money in the current real estate IRA, we really need to make improvements to the property, but do not have the money in the IRA. Can we finance some of these improvements, and what is the procedure for doing so?
Certainly. Most people up to this point have invested in real estate through IRAs on an all-cash basis, mainly because loans didn't exist until just a few years ago. So if you've got 100% equity in your IRA, then you can go to one of the lenders that's available, the main one being IRALending.com, that will lend to IRAs and refinance with them. And you can probably, you know, get up to upwards to 70% financing to, you know, build out the property. If that doesn't work, and you don't have any other pension plans or IRAs lying around that you could transfer in to add to your existing IRA, then you can make the annual contribution, which is $4,000 or $5,000 if you're over age 50, or if it's a SEP IRA, $45,000, or similarly a Solo K. You can make those contributions to beef up the IRA, or you can take a third-party loan into the IRA from somebody that's not directly related to you, and, you know, make a 10-year loan or whatever with a healthy interest rate. And as your project pays off in maybe 3 years and you cash out, you pay off the loan, that kind of thing. And lastly, if you're totally out of all recourse and you don't have any funds at all and all those other things are not working for you, then you actually can loan your your IRA money yourself personally, provided it's a non-interest-bearing loan. You supply a note to the custodian within 60 days of lending the money to the IRA, indicating that the IRA owes it to you and that you generally pay it back within 5 years. And again, it's non-interest-bearing, and there's a provision in the code. I think it's 80-36 under DOL code. It gives an exemption for doing so when the operation of the IRA is at risk, or if you have a, you know, an investment like that, there's no other recourse to maintain the value of the IRA, then you can lend money on that basis. You probably want to consult a knowledgeable attorney if you go to that last step, but all those steps are possible.
Okay, and we are just out of time. I want to give one last resource, and that's Tom's blog, tomandersonblog.com. And he does blog a lot about these different subjects, so you may find some answers to your questions if we didn't get to it on this call. So I want to thank everybody, all of our listeners. There's a lot of you out there, close to 300 today. Thank you so much for listening and tuning in, and I sure hope you got a lot out of it. And Doug and Tom, thank you very much. Doug, for your presentation.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
And Tom, for coming in from Maine and taking a little break from your vacation. That's great. And join us, everybody. Come to the next event in Boston, September 20th. And I'm Robin Levin saying bye for now. We'll see you next month.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Now.